At Sierra, discover great deals on top brand workout gear, like high-quality walking shoes, which might lead to another discovery.
40,000 steps, baby! Who's on top now, Karen?
You've taken the office step challenge a step too far. Don't worry, though. Sierra also has yoga gear. It might be a good place to find your zen. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
When did making plans get this complicated? It's time to streamline with WhatsApp, the secure messaging app that brings the whole group together. Use polls to settle dinner plans. Send event invites and pin messages so no one forgets mom's 60th. And never miss a meme or milestone. All protected with end-to-end encryption. It's time for WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone. Learn more at whatsapp.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. Checking off the boxes on your to-do list is a great feeling. And when it comes to checking off coverage, a State Farm agent can help you choose an option that's right for you. Whether you prefer talking in person, on the phone, or using the award-winning app, it's nice knowing you have help finding coverage that best fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Pro Savings Days are back at Lowe's. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero here on The Tour Coach. Thanks for joining in and thanks for following along. It is my mission to bring you some of the best instructors, the players, mental coaches, fitness experts, everything you need to play better golf, all of the people I find fascinating that can give you information to help you in your pursuit as a teacher or as a player. It's all here on Dew Sweeper TV or wherever it is you get your podcast. Thanks for watching The Tour Coach podcast, and hopefully this helps you teach better, play better, and enjoy the game. So joining us here on the Golf Coach Development monthly little Zoom, we've been trying to do this for a while. It's great to have him on, as well as on the Tour Coach podcast. Was on that a good while back. PGA Teacher of the Year, new award since the last time. I saw you at the PGA show as it was announced. So I technically have already told you congratulations. But from right up the road from where I'm sitting at Old Palmies up at Jupiter Hills, Jason Bale. What's up, Jason?
Tony, how are you? Thank you so much for having me. I think this is such an awesome thing that you do for young coaches and coaches around any age group. Really cool give back.
I like to say younger because it makes me feel better. Like maybe, you know, I'm not too terribly old, but I tell them circling the drain. So obviously a lot of folks, you know, what's weird is when we started this podcast, shit, it's been a while now. Like I didn't ever intend it to be just a lot of teachers listening. You know, I thought I might be more entertaining to people that aren't teachers, but I was wrong. So I guess my humor works better with teachers. But anyways, it's turned into a really cool deal as well as the podcast. I know Jackson's going to field questions and we got some questions too. But obviously it's people that are, if you're listening to this, I always say either one, you're bored, or two, you're a golf teacher and you're really into it, or you're just one of those people that's really into getting better at the game, crazy about the game and the pursuit that it is. And so we've had some questions that were submitted and sent in, and one of the, so I'm going to just start with some of those. And one of the topics go down is really the difference, or as you see it, of teaching tour players, which you teach a bunch of them, versus regular students, whether it's juniors, college players, or just the members you have at Jupiter Hills. I know you still teach a good number of those, and you know, just like I do here at Old Palm. So kind of wanted to start is like, how do you approach, do you treat them different? What are the differences? And you know, and then just take us through also what are some of the low hanging fruit that's out there also for whether you're a teacher or a player for trying to get better?
Yeah. Well, I'll start with that. Let's start with the low hanging fruit part of it. I was just up in Chicago doing something for Titleist, and I would, especially the young and up and coming teachers that are probably listening to this, especially if you're still, if you're not like teaching full time, but you enjoy teaching and you're coming out of the shop or something, you know, several hours a day or several hours a week, and you're just trying to kind of make sure you can, you're not giving everybody the shanks or something, is like, I would be a master at the setup stuff, at the really simple things, you know, grip and club face matchup. None of that stuff is sexy enough to put on Instagram. It wouldn't get many clicks, but as far as like just being a master of the things that happen before a player starts swinging. We have a saying around here that nobody gets worse from setting up better, even though it may feel different to them in the beginning. But if you can match up some stuff with the grip and the club face being square and having some good tilts and bends and understanding where left elbow is versus right elbow for your average club player, you can make a lot of money doing that. You can be very popular, and you never get the the scorn of the member that says, well, you know I'm gonna have to get worse before I get better, and you know, I change this, and oh, I'm never gonna get there. You know, just be really good at that simple stuff, and we call that, you know, doing the ordinary things extraordinarily well. And getting back to, you know, first part of your question, I run the same playbook with a member that I do with one of the best players in the world. The language sometimes a little different, and obviously the skill level is different, and the ability to make your body moves different. But I do run the same basic playbook, which is I'm looking at, the player that comes in is coming to you because their ball won't fly the way they want it to. I mean, that's essentially what it is. So, whether that's one of the best players in the world or one of our members at a club. And so your job is to effect some change in the simplest way you possibly can. And whenever we change something pre-swing, it's going to affect some type of change in the path or the club face or where the low point is. And then you just sit back and let that player kind of marinate in that just a second and see what the athlete's going to do before you make your second play call. And that's, you know, been successful for me. Like I said, it doesn't warrant all the Instagram clicks or anything like that, like shallowing the club or this type of stuff. But it really is a great way to be good at your job and to get somebody to affect some change really early on in the time together.
I think, you know, when my old mentor that I came up under, Hank, he always, you know, I remember when he pulled me aside, I was just starting. I didn't know anything, way less than I do now. And, you know, it was like, if you could master putting people's grips on there and how to posture them to the ball, and you could make a divot in front of the ball, he's like, you'll make a good living. And at that time, making a good living was all I was, that's all I was trying to do.
Pay the car payment.
I had mine repossessed, this Explorer. It was a beauty. You know, and again, I think it's interesting what you're talking about too, because I've watched, and you watch some stuff on social media. You know, I mean, I travel like you do. I'm sure you peruse through things and you see stuff that's out there. And I see lots of these people that don't seem to where they'll touch a grip. And yeah. I'm like, I have people, Jackson was talking to me a little bit before we came on the air or whatever you want to call it. Like, I'm going to jump in there and fix a damn grip if they need to fix a grip. Like, and it, like you said, maybe taking the time to put their hands on there doesn't make a great reel on Instagram, right, but it's going to make the person in front of you better.
Oh, like we've always said, you got two connections in the game, your feet to the ground and your hands to the club, and they need to be really pretty good.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit. I'm going to go through some of these questions. And Jackson, if you've got anything or anybody types anything, please jump in. How much of elite coaching is mechanics versus psychology? I thought that was a pretty good question.
Really good one.
I think at the upper level, I think it's a lot of both, right?
Absolutely.
And I think the art is knowing when to say stuff versus not, because I think we've all, if we've done what you do and I've done, like, we've probably all said the right thing at the wrong time and gotten blasted for it, you know, and we've all kept our mouths shut when maybe we should have said something and got blasted for that too. So. Yeah. You know, so learning, but how do you distinguish the two?
I think in the beginning of that, like, I know I've tried to do a better job of this in the last couple of years. I think when you first get fortunate enough to coach some players at a really high level, you're very eager to prove your worth, or mm-hmm. that you belong, or that you got this under control. And that's when you make those mistakes, like you just said, that we've all made, where you say something that at a time you shouldn't have said. It could be the greatest piece of advice in the world, right? But you just right. said it at the wrong time. So I've tried to get really good at asking enough questions before I open my mouth. Like, hey, you didn't like that shot. Okay. What didn't you like about it? Okay. And then so mm-hmm. I want to listen to that first. Well, it started too far right. Okay, great. Did you hit it solid? Yeah, it was in the middle of the face. Okay. It started too far right. I just don't like it starting that far right. Okay. What do you think made that happen? Well, the club face is probably pointing that way. Yeah. Okay. And then I'll back away. All right. They already answered the question that the club face was aimed too far to the right when it touched the golf ball. All right. So, like, I just want to see what they will do with that information. And then I'll let them hit a couple of more balls, which is really difficult to do because you are still trying to prove your worth. And I'm going to save the day. And in reality, that's when you can go the wrong way and try. I know I did that very early on a range. I had a player that was missing it left. And I sat in my garage the night before rolling up there on a, you know, Friday morning or something. And if he misses it left, this is what I'm going to do. And I sawed an alignment rod in half. And I said, I'm going to stick it in the ground like this. I'm going to tell him to match the shaft up with it at impact. I got this thing solved. Okay. So sure enough, the next day, you know, we get to hitting some irons and some are going left. And I jump in there on my white horse to save the day and throw this down on the ground and say, this is what I want you to do. And he makes about five swings trying to do what I want to do, tosses the seven iron back to his caddy and goes, this is going to be a great day, and walks to the putting green. And I'm like, you know, I didn't ask enough questions. I didn't look for him to lead me to where he wanted to go. I just said, I'm really smart. Look at me. I'm going to save the day. And I've learned from that mistake. So I try really hard, especially if it's a player I've worked with for a little while. We kind of have our playbook and we try to stay within our playbook. And if the player says something to me that's kind of out of the ordinary of things that we've talked about in the past or plays that we've run, that's when I listen the most, is because, whoa, he just said something that I've never heard him say.
Right.
Especially if you have that relationship that you've been together for a while, you've had success and you've had your failures and you've worked through those things. I think when they say something that's out of the playbook, that's when you should listen the most. But I just try to be a way better listener than I am somebody who's in there on my white horse.
I love that. Jackson, you got anything?
Yeah, very good. I'm curious how often or how difficult is it to maybe push back when you have to with a good player on that playbook, like if you do want them or need them going in a direction?
It is very difficult, especially when, and I think like the younger players, I was just thinking about that because my phone just went off I'm sure it's a video from New Orleans, but, the younger players, tend to be so much more video oriented. They'll send you, I'm sure y'all get this as well.
Yeah.
You know, you get a swing video with no context, like, And the world's worst thing you can do is, yeah, well, the club face looks a little open or this or that. And he goes, well, I was hitting it awesome. I just wanted to show off. You know, so you've got to, you always try to text back, you know, well, how's the ball flying? Because they think those swings look that much different all the time. And they really don't. And they're always going to pick on the thing that that they don't like aesthetically about their golf swing. And I think most of the players, they'll pick on something. So let's just say it's a, you know, right knee shoots out on the downswing, right hip gets a little high and they kind of, you know, little thrust and right bend against it. And they don't like the way that looks. And so they're always trying to fix the symptom when, you know, the takeaway in the backswing pivot, you know, screwed up, you know, made them become an athlete. And that was their compensation on the way down to hit a good golf shot. But they keep working on that symptom instead of actually treating the disease. And I think that's when you can kind of get in the weeds if you don't explain to the player, like, that was you being awesome. All right. Yeah, you don't like your right hip jutting out and your knee shooting out there and right bending against it and the shaft got a little under and blah, blah, blah. But you had to do that because of how you pivoted on the way back or how the club moved. Like, that was you being awesome. So embrace the fact that you were awesome. All right. Let's fix the actual disease. And I bet you the symptom gets better.
Yeah.
Sure. I think that's one of the, you know, people always ask me, like, you know, how do you get better at that? A lot of that's just experience, right? Like,
oh, I remember, you know, I remember going into Todd Anderson's office when I was at Sea Island years and years ago, and I was working on my coaching game, you know, and I knocked on Todd's door and I was like, can I talk to you? He's like, sure. And I said, hey, you know, like, what do I need to do to get better? And he was like, Jason, you know, I've seen you teach. Like, you just got to do it more.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, well, you need to do this more. You need to do that. It's like, you just have to do it more. And there is no substitute for that. No substitute for those reps that you need in order to find out what, you know, to find your own voice as a coach and to find out the tools that work in certain situations and the ones that you think are really cool that never seem to work. I know I've had, you know, these wonderful, awesome swing thoughts that I thought would be great for a player, and they sounded cool. And even the player would go, yeah, that sounds awesome. And then it never works. And so you have to get rid of those no matter how cool they sound.
Well, too. And I think you have to be who you are as a coach too, right? Absolutely. And who you are as a teacher. And I think as a teacher coming up, you know, it's easy to get caught in fads. Like, I'm sure we've all done it. And, you know, I remember when TrackMan came out and, you know, I got fired by a good player. And I was like, well, shit, I got to become TrackMan Maestro or something, right?
Yeah.
But shit, like, I mean, I can't teach like that. That doesn't fit my personality. And I think that's a good lesson for players. Need to play to their personality, and they can't try to be somebody they're not. And teachers can't be somebody they're not either. You got to figure out within your skill set what you do that's great, like you were talking about the player, like that's what makes you awesome. Whatever it is, it's your gift that's great at it. You know, you need to figure out how to do that and how to grow, but stay true to who you are.
And I 100%. I think a way that I try to do that, especially early on with a player, whether it's a PGA Tour player or a you know 12 handicapper at the club. Is they're expecting you in that early on part of a get together, don't even call it a lesson, just a session together, get to know you type of thing. They're expecting you to tell them what's wrong, mm-hmm. all right, and then show them how to fix it. And I try to always lead with explaining to them what their superpower is. You know, like this is awesome. And they go, really? You know, and you're like, no, this is your superpower. Like, I can't believe how well you load into your right side, into your backswing. Like, that's elite level. If I'm talking to a 10 handicap, like that's what I like to see the best players in the world do. Or that's my preference for how players should move. Or, man, I love where your club gets at the top. Or I love, anything that you can come up with that puts them in a non-defensive way into going, wow. Like, I just had somebody who is pretty good at what they do tell me I have a superpower.
Right.
And you want to try to make sure that as a coach, you don't steal their superpower. Because if you go messing with what made them a PGA Tour player or what makes them a 10 handicap for that matter, you know, it could be they could have an open club face and flash it really good and have great timing. And you just go, wow, that's a superpower. Let's make sure that your tempo always stays really good, because if it gets fast, your superpower of how you square the face might go out the window.
Mm-hmm. I think too, like as a player and teachers and players looking at like, what's the goal are you trying to get out of it? Right. Like, yeah. You know, if we use the example of an open-faced person, that say the guy's a tour player or a 5 or 6 handicap at your club, it's like, well, I mean, well, I'm trying to win my club championship. Well, is that open club face why you don't win the club championship? Or maybe you're a shitty bunker player, right? Or maybe, exactly. You're not, or whatever it is, right? Like,
Or don't play well enough under pressure. You need to develop some skills to deal with pressure better,
Right, right. And I think, like you talked about, that's part of the getting to know a player, right? And whether it's, and I don't know that enough teachers and enough players, and this goes for like somebody listening that's a 12 handicap that wants to get better. Like, man, like the more you communicate with your teacher and the more you get to know each other, the better everybody can work together and help each other, right? Like, if you've had those lessons, I'm sure, where you, like, you tell the person something and they don't speak and an hour goes by and they've said like four words and you're like, well, shit, I think I did all right. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they didn't give me any feedback, And you're like, and you show them a video and you're like, here, you see this? And they just go, it's like, hey, I'm the wrong guy probably for you. Right? Like, so, but I think that's important, getting to know your student and what you talked about listening. I think instead of just trying to tell everybody everything you know about the golf swing in the first 57 minutes of the lesson, like, I would say I talk way less now in a lesson than I ever have.
I definitely talk way less about golf.
Yeah.
I talk more about fishing or who won the baseball game, but
right.
Less about golf. Not
about getting to know them. Jackson, you got more? You're on a roll, buddy.
There's a reason Chevy trucks are known for their dependability, because they show up no matter the weather, push forward no matter the terrain, and deliver. That's why Chevrolet has earned more dependability awards for trucks than any other brand in 2025, according to J.D. Power. Because in every Chevy truck, like every Chevy driver, dependability comes standard. Visit Chevy.com to learn more. Chevrolet received the highest total number of awards among all the trucks in the J.D. Power 2025 U.S. Vehicle Dependability Study. Awards based on 2022 models. Newer models may be shown. Visit jdpower.com/awards for more details. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive.
Popsicles, sprinklers, a cool breeze. Talk about refreshing. You know what else is refreshing this summer? A brand new phone with Verizon. Yep, get a new phone on any plan with Select Phone Trade-In and My Plan. And lock down a low price for 3 years on any plan with My Plan. This is a deal for everyone, whether you're a new or existing customer. Swing by Verizon today for our best phone deals. 3 year price guarantee applies to then current base monthly rate only. Additional terms and conditions apply for all offers.
What have been some successful tactics that you've used to mentor young coaches that you work with you?
Oh, that's a great one. I love that. Let me kind of use a story to kind of explain that, because it was extremely meaningful to me. And I'm not on your podcast or a national award winner or coach some of the players I coach unless this happens to me. So it's as recent as 2016. I win a little PGA Chapter Teacher of the Year award, come back to the club as my first one. I was all excited and everything. And I had a member who was a very smart man, and he was coming to his lesson. He congratulated me. I said, thank you very much. Means a lot. And he said, you need to start working on your brand. And I went, ooh, because I got a little cringy for me, because I was like, I'm going to have a logo and a catchy nickname. And that's just not me. And that's not that there's anything wrong with people that have that. But I didn't know how to formulate that brand concept. I'd never thought of it that way. And he said, well, you do know what a brand is, don't you? And I had no good answer for him. Like, I said AT&T, Coca-Cola, like I had nothing. And the statement that I'm getting ready to say changed the entire trajectory of my career. He said, a brand is a promise that what you do works. And that hit me in the head. Like, it was like, I knew what I did as far as like, yeah, I'm a golf coach. Yeah, I try to make people better. And I'd had some juniors go to college or something like that, but I was coaching no tour players or anything like that. And I had to take inventory of myself as a coach, and I had to kind of break down as an exercise, like what it was that I actually believed in. And it was at a time where I think, like all young coaches, we don't think we know enough. And so we know we don't know enough, but we're getting away with it because people like to be around us, and we, they come to us because we're fun or whatever, but we think we're not good enough to solve big problems. And so then you go on the certification circus and you get every certification that you can. You come back with all this knowledge. So you actually have more knowledge, but you're actually a worse teacher for a while. and a worse coach because you don't actually know how to apply those tools. Okay. But it's a necessary part of growth. Okay. Is to go from, I don't have enough, to now I feel like I've got more, but I don't know how to use it. And then you whittle back down that to the actual things that you believe in and the things that you know work. All right. Because you've been through the trial and error and use the cadavers every now and then to figure out what works. And then you actually can do the exercise that I was able to do, which was come down to kind of my framework. And so because I went through all of that and I've gone through imposter syndrome of walking on a PGA Tour range for the first time and going, holy shit, am I really supposed to be here? And what if my guy hits it bad? What am I going to do? And you're out there and then you get through that and then you find that your framework works for you. And my framework's not going to work for every player, but my framework's going to work for the majority of the players. I feel like that obviously the ones that I've been successful with, it's not because of me. It's because of the partnership that we've created together, the playbook that we've created together. So I think, like, speaking to younger coaches or developing coaches, it's like, be okay with not knowing enough. Then be okay when you screw up because you know too much and you don't know how to apply it, because that's when the most growth is actually going to take place in your career, when you're forced to whittle it down to the things that you really know are foundational principles for how you want to coach.
No, I agree. I think that that learning curve is hard for people, right?
And I think we don't like to fail. We don't like to screw up, you know?
And I think it's, I think the challenge is to keep learning after you are successful. I mean, it gets harder because the demands on your time, I think, are more obviously with your schedule and those, it gets harder to do that. But I think you've always got to carve time out. And you know, my philosophy has always been to try to surround myself with people that are way smarter than me at things that I'm not worth the shit at. You know, like, and you develop those relationships. Obviously, like for me, it's people like Colby that's coming out here tomorrow. We're going to teach a few hours together and things like that, that people you have access to. And I think is whether you're a teacher or a player, if you keep surrounding yourself with people that are vested in you and great at what they do, you got a chance to get better.
Yeah. To your point, I think I've been doing some reflecting here recently, because you do get yourself in, you know, you get better at your craft. More people want to, come see you or whatever. And you end up, you know, running around and trying to please everybody. And I've noticed on some, you know, some plane rides or some hotel room beers that, like, there's some places where I've got some weak areas and I'm like, really excited about this summer, because I'm going to shut down some of, I'm going to try to, you know, grab my schedule back and own it a little bit more, because I know that I've got some growing to do. I'm not finished growing. So there's some places and some people that I've already identified that I need to, you know, I need to work. I need to be able to discern stats better. It's one of my, I feel like, my weak spots. I need to be able to develop practice plans around the stats that are going on. I need to be more creative in the practice plans that I work with a player. You know, there's some performance stuff that I want to go down a little bit of the road with to be a better, just to be a better coach, you know, get the X's and O's out of it, of the golf swing, and get more into the relationship with the player and how do I push them in the correct direction. So I'm excited about that, you know, because I don't really want to watch another video on how to shallow the club. I want to find these areas that I know I'm weaker at than I want to be, so that I can exist within the ecosystem better.
If I didn't watch another video on shallowing or another video on front post loading, I'd be all right. Hell, I mean, this would be great. Be a good world we live in.
Yes.
And you know, another thing, and I'd like your comments on this. I had a young guy once, and I still do this every year. But like, I think it's really healthy at the end of the year or whatever. I think it's easy to do at the end of the year, but like to sit down and try to write down and identify the things that you think are important in the golf swing, especially if you're up and coming teacher, right?
Yeah.
Like, now that sounds like super easy, but it's way the hell harder than it sounds. Like when you start having to really write it down on a piece of paper or a note in your phone, like the things that you think are important and that you believe in your preferences, like it's way harder. But I think I still do that every year. And I like to flip back through past years and see, you know, and you kind of identify what's forced you to change a little bit of this or a little bit of that. But I think that's, and I think it's good as players to do that too. I think I always try to have this podcast be able to help you, whether you're teaching or playing, but I think as a player to identify the things that you think are important and the things that you're good at is healthy as well.
Yeah. What's your recipe? I mean, that's what I kind of call it from a player standpoint. It's like every player's got their own recipe of when they play well and how they move and how they swing. And do they, you know, take a week off or a week before a golf tournament and play more golf playing into it? Or do they take a week off and work technique stuff or fundamental stuff and hit more balls? You know, what's the recipe? Every player should have that recipe and realize, like, you know, this is what helps me actually play better. And when I tried this way, it didn't help me play better. So, and to your point about the golf swing stuff, it probably would have been, you know, some grandiose, huge list of mine 10 years ago. And as I've watched, you know, better and better players and seen club players improve, gosh, the list is actually getting smaller and more manageable, at least for me.
Eczema isn't always obvious, but it's real. And so is the relief from Ebglyss. After an initial dosing phase, about 4 in 10 people taking Ebglyss achieved itch relief and clear or almost clear skin at 16 weeks. And most of those people maintain skin that's still more clear at 1 year with monthly dosing.
Ebglyss, lebrikizumab, LBKZ, a 250 milligram per 2 milliliter injection, is a prescription medicine used to treat adults and children 12 years of age and older who weigh at least 88 pounds or 40 kilograms with moderate to severe eczema, also called atopic dermatitis, that is not well controlled with prescription therapies used on the skin or topicals, or who cannot use topical therapies. Ebglyss can be used with or without topical corticosteroids. Don't use if you're allergic to Ebglyss. Allergic reactions can occur that can be severe. Eye problems can occur. Tell your doctor if you have new or worsening eye problems. You should not receive a live vaccine when treated with Ebglyss. Before starting Ebglyss, tell your doctor if you have a parasitic infection.
Searching for real relief? Ask your doctor about Ebglyss and visit ebglyss.lilly.com or call 1-800-LILLY-RX or 1-800-545-5979.
Imagine fast hydration combined with balanced energy. Perfectly flavored with zero artificial sweeteners. Introducing Liquid IV's new Energy Multiplier Sugar-Free. Unlike other energy drinks, you know, the ones that make you feel like you're glitching, it's made with natural caffeine and electrolytes. So you get the boost without the burnout. Liquid IV's new Energy Multiplier Sugar-Free Hydrating Energy. Tap the banner to learn more.
No question. How do you determine how much data or deep dive stuff a player can handle? And I think that goes across because everybody's different. We've had tour players that don't want much. You to keep something real simple and give them a thought or feel. And then you got guys, like I always say, there's no way he would never ask me, but no way I could teach Bryson. I'd have to go jump off the top of a
bridge.
But you get the same, like you got guys that are an engineer that are, you know, that's a 15 handicap, and he's going to want more than a tour player. So it runs across all skill levels. How do you determine how much you go into with a student? Do you have any kind of hard or fast rules for that, or do you just kind of feel it out?
Yeah, I think like I would use, let's just say we're using a launch monitor, for instance, and it's a member. Okay. He wants to hit a draw, and we've got a 6-degree club path to the left. Okay. And one of my fun ways of doing this, if you can get away with it, because it's actually really, really cool, is you say, okay, I'm gonna give you 6 balls. I'm gonna, you know, and you take an average club path 6.5 to the left or something. Okay. And you say, what shot shape do you want to hit? And they say, well, I really want to draw it. I've always wanted to draw it, but I always hit this pull cut. So, okay, well, where would a draw start in relation to the target line? Oh, it would start to the right. Okay. Could I move your hands on the club a little bit, set you up a little bit different? And I'd like for you to take the next 6 balls. And the only intent you have after we've gotten our setup stuff is you need to make this ball start to the right. And I'll just throw launch direction up there. And I would give them a, you know, ask them to create a challenge point. So I say, okay, I've got six balls. How many do you think you can start? He goes, I can start three. Great. Go ahead. Okay. Turn it on. Let him do his six balls. He starts four to the right. Okay. And you go back and you look, you flip club path back up there, and lo and behold, five out of the six, the club path now moved to the right. And you've only hit 12 balls, his original six and your six with the changes on it. That's when I throw club path up there. Go, okay, did you realize you just moved your club path this much by with the intent of starting the ball to the right and a couple of setup changes? And you go, no, right. Okay, well, invariably, several of those shots actually went to the right and had a little curve to them. The rest of them kind of hung out there to the right. And so which direction do you think the ball should curve? Okay, to the left. All right, I'm going to give you new six balls. How many do you think you can start to the right and curve to the left? And they will have started hit. They'll hit three good draws out of those six balls, and you've gone nowhere into technique. And so I call that lesson an intent lesson. They didn't have the right picture in their head. They weren't set up properly. They didn't have the club face and grip matched up or whatever. And they just created the rest of it out of intent. You're only going to get away with that with certain players. The engineer guy that you're talking about, he's going to want to know, you know, what vertical swing plane is while we're talking about that. So you're going to have to give him a little bit different part of that. He's going to want to know, why did it do this? And that's when I would pop on the video and go, well, when it came down, you know, the first several times, it's running down your lead arm. And when you came down the last several times, it's working down your trail arm or closer to your trail arm. Then you can kind of give them what they want, spoon feed them what you want. But I always tell everybody, technology is a scoreboard. It's not a teaching machine. It's just saying we were 6 degrees to the left on your first six balls, and now we're a couple of degrees to the right. We were down at halftime, and now we're leading.
Good analogy there. Jackson, you got anything else?
Yeah, I'm curious.
Where are you walking? Are you like on a stroll doing this?
Yeah, I am on a stroll. It's nice outside, man.
My God, first time doing the podcast on a walk.
That's right. You can go into as much detail as you want or keep it as simple as you want, but what would your superpowers be as a coach, and are they different for elite players to your club golfer?
That's a good one. You asked me to talk about myself. I would say that
you don't have to be shy either. Like this is about you.
Well, the way I grew up, my environment, which lots of environments, obviously we all know, produce certain characteristics and things. So, you know, I grew up with a father as a high school football and basketball coach. I never wanted to do anything else but coach college basketball from the time I was 8 years old until I found golf and decided that was what I was going to do. And so I've always, I took a lot more, pleasure out of calling plays than running plays. So I would make my my brothers, because my dad had access to every piece of gear you could possibly have access to. We had full pads when we were, you know, 9 years old. So I'd make my brothers dress up in full gear and play one-on-one football against each other while I called plays on the sidelines. I don't know if you know it or not, but there's not too many plays you can call in one-on-one football. But I enjoyed calling timeout and bringing one of them over there and giving them a pep talk and saying, this is what I want you to do on the next play. I had a clipboard and a tie and everything. So I enjoy the, you know, what I call play calling. I enjoy like walking up to the player and saying, hey, look, this is what I need you to do here. All right. I need you to run this play a couple of times. Then let's talk about it. All right. This is what I need you to do. What did you like about it? What didn't you like about it? And that relationship building to me is, I guess, my superpower. I mean, I'm smart enough to know that, these guys are, you know, and ladies are my friends to a certain extent. All right. Like I enjoy getting a beer with them and going to dinner with them. And I enjoy talking sports with them. I enjoy getting to know their families. I'm not naive enough to think that I'm irreplaceable. So I know that at some point I'll probably be replaced by most of them. And I'm now comfortable with that because I know that the direction and the way that the caring that I'm trying to put forth within the relationship is geared the right way. So I'm a little easier on myself if I were to be fired, you know, because it's like, hey, I wasn't a great match, or hey, you made some mistakes. You should have gone here. You should have pushed harder there. I think really good coaches and just, you know, good human beings are reflective. So I try to be that as much as I can. So to answer the question, I think the superpower to me has been a whole lot more about building the relationship, earning the trust, than it has been about, you know, I'm the world's greatest backswing coach, you know.
Jackson, one more. You got anything?
I'm all tapped out. That was really good, Mr. Bale. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Damn, calling you Mr. Bale. Shit.
I'm gonna punch him in the arm next time I see him.
I don't think I've had a beer with him yet, so it's like it's gotta be.
Yeah, that's it. That's Jackson's rule. He did say that. I'll give him that.
Is it really? Is that your rule? I didn't even know you had rules, Jackson.
Yeah, that's my rule at the club. If I can't call them by their first name until I have an adult beverage with them. So
I'm gonna end this with this question, because this question that came in is absolutely hysterical for me. Because I can answer this. Do you have to like the people you teach? I just thought that was humorous. I just thought it was funny for some days.
Oh, that's a great one. No, that's absolutely a great one. I don't think you do. I don't think they better know you don't. You know?
Especially if they're a member.
I have a couple that like, as I reflect on players I haven't been successful with, and it's not that I don't like them. And I think this is where like the runway with a player, I think, so important, is while I probably wouldn't want to have a, you know, beer or go to dinner with them, meaning that I don't know that we have that much in common outside of me helping you try to play better. But I think that's the real challenge. It's, you know, Tony, it's easy for you and I and Jackson to coach Southern boys, probably, you know, like it's, you know,
tried it one time with a West Coast lib. It didn't work.
It didn't work. Yeah. And so I
he
think
played good, but I couldn't handle it.
Yeah. And then I think at the same time, like it's one of those things that, you know, certain nationalities too, right? It's, you know, trying to figure out if you're going to be a well-rounded coach, trying to figure out how to operate in a different environment, even though, this is not my favorite situation. I'm probably going to get fired in a month, but can I figure out how to learn from it so that I'm more equipped the next time? Because most of us are not in positions to turn down great players. We can't turn down the members at our club. Okay. That's a good way to get escorted off property at some point. So, you know, you have to learn to be a slightly different coach, and, you know, it's like, no different if you were a option, you know, offense coach, but you had to be on the staff of the air raid offense. You'd have to figure out a way to bring some skills to that. And I think that's growth there. No, to answer the question, no, you don't have to like them, in my opinion.
I thought it was a good question.
It's a great question.
I wanted to hear the answer to that. I enjoyed that. Yeah, I agree. I think you got to – I mean, I don't think you have to like them. I do think to have long-term success – with a professional player long term. I mean, not a season or whatever. I think you gotta have some affection for each other, because it's too tough of a business. It's too hard.
You gotta have a commonality, whether you're SEC football fans or Miami Heat basketball fans or your two teams hate each other and you just like ribbing each other about it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That was awesome. Jackson, thanks for putting this together. Jason, thanks for being able to do this with us. I appreciate it. I know you're busy as well. And best of luck the rest of the season. I'm sure we'll catch up soon. Jackson, any more questions at all before?
All set, T-Ball. Thank you, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, thank you. Thank you guys very much for thinking of me with this. And kudos to what you're doing, spreading the good word about coaching. And I think that's awesome. Great give back. Exactly what good coaches should be doing. So appreciate all you do with that. And I know the rest of your following do as well.
Jason, thanks so much. We'll look forward to catching up soon.
You got it. All the best, guys.
Thanks, guys.